Welcome to the Esports Business Network podcast. I am Trent Knox, the founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I'll be the host on this episode of the EBN podcast, EBNP number 54. Our guest is Magnus Lepinyame, the president of Esports at Esports Entertainment Group. In this podcast, we discuss Magnus's career in gaming and esports, the operations of running a publicly traded esports company, and how he intends to grow the business from his role at the company. Enjoy.
This is the future. Evolution. This is the future.
Welcome back to another Esports Business Network podcast. I'm your host, Trent Knox. Today, I'm joined by Magnus Lepinyame. Welcome to the show, Magnus.
Thanks, Trent. Nice to meet you, and thanks for having me here today.
Yeah, it's really interesting because the reason why I wanted to have you on the show is because Esports Entertainment Group is one of the like maybe three companies listed as publicly traded companies in the United States, and you know, people have access to the stock market globally. But this is something that's really interesting to me, and we'll talk about that later on in the show. But before we jump into the Esports Entertainment Group, I'd like to get to know Magnus a little bit better and let the audience know, when did you first get into the gaming and esports industry?
I actually been working my whole life in gaming industry. I started selling in Nintendo 8-bits in Sweden for rentals back in the middle of the 90s there. But I got introduced to esports actually 2008 when Street Fighter 4 was launched. I was the product manager of a company called Panvision in Sweden. So we had the marketing rights and distribution rights for that game. And people from DreamHack reached out to me and said, hey, Street Fighter is a huge game. We have a festival coming up there. You should put that game in there. Like, okay, that sounds cool. Let's do that. And I actually funded that first tournament to marketing money from Capcom that spent, and we did that. It was an amazing event. I saw that from a picture. I didn't go there. I was like, that's on a Saturday, going to a small city in Sweden called Jönköping. Who does that? So that I was like, okay, cool event, a lot of things, good feedback on that event. So that was good ones, and continued doing that for a couple of years. And I was actually going to Gamescom in 2013 there, and I actually met the DreamHack guys again on the plane back from the event, and they're like, what are you doing nowadays? You should join us. And I'm like, maybe it doesn't, you know, selling space, whatever, what is that? And I had a conversation with him, and I like still wasn't convinced. Then actually a guy called Patrick Sampson actually phoned me up and said, hey Magnus, you need to join here. And the thing is, I'm tall, I'm 6'6". He's even taller than me. Like, you know, that guy said, you need to join. And I said, okay, I'm coming. And I haven't regretted a second. That was an amazing ride with DreamHack. Like, when I joined December 2013, you know, DreamHack, they do 5 events per year. I was number 13, 14 into the company. And when I left, it was 17, 18 events. All the people employed, that journey was amazing to be there also. So I learned a lot from that, those 7 years with DreamHack. So before I left for another thing there, but I've been gaming for since that, and love gaming, still play video game, even more on a casual side. I got a son who's, you know, 17. He runs 8s around me when we play Call of Duty or we play Counter-Strike and all that. So, but it's all fun for me. It's more, you know, getting when I'm a lot of things to think about, you need a break. It's perfect to go play around the Warzone. Just hang around there for, you know, I lose around a little bit. I get into the circle there. That's perfect for me.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask you next. I was going to ask you if in your life now, you're still a gamer, if you're still playing games. A lot of people who join into the industry, you know, eventually kind of play games casually here and there, but don't get the opportunity to really play them as they once did when they were a kid.
I mean, I don't have time to play as much as I want to do that. I mean, Call of Duty is perfect to me, you know, a couple of times, maybe an hour, a couple of hours per week. That's what I have time. It's not any grinding. It's not, for me, it's just pure, just relaxing, thinking about other things for me. So that's, I wish I had more time sometimes to be better, but that's what it is. And for me, it's just pure, you know, thinking of stuff there, not work all the time, because with Esports Entertainment Group, what we're doing, it is a 24/7 job. We're doing a lot of things, and you know, we're running at warp speed right now and done a couple of acquisitions there also that to change the company, build out the company also.
Yeah. And so you mentioned that one of your first opportunities in the esports industry was working for DreamHack, one of the largest entertainment and gaming companies in the world. And there's an event coming up virtually next week for DreamHack. So what was like your experience there? What was your role and what were you doing? You mentioned sales, but what was that? What was like the day-to-day when you were doing that first, the first role you had at DreamHack before you moved to Entertainment Group?
Yeah, I came in as a sales partnership sales, working with partnership, you know, like you with HyperX, HP, Omen, you know, all the brands that want to get the endemic brands in the business there. That's who we actually, that I was targeting, working with there. I came in to do that. And in 2015, I actually spearheaded the first event for DreamHack US event that we did in Austin in 2016 there. Mm-hmm. Went over to PAX West, met a couple of people there, and saw there was a huge interest for doing DreamHack, and we said, let's explore that. And I think me and Thomas Lykkedal traveled over to the US in January to actually see where can we do the first event. We actually traveled to Denver, Colorado, and we met a lot of good people there. Actually, I met Justin Moskowitz over there also that mm-hmm. joined us at DreamHack later on there. But that's where I was getting interest and met the first people actually that brought us into that US space, spearheading that part. But I've been at sales, and as I said, for us, it's all bringing the brands in there. It's been a little bit of an education part for when we work there, because a lot of the non-endemic brands, if you talk to Burger King, or we talk to McDonald's, we talk to, you know, airlines, car company, all that, too early for them. I mean, they you have to explain that, yes, there are people that are watching other people playing video games. That it is true, and it's a big thing. You have these big events, people come to them, you know, you show pictures on DreamHack events, show pictures on ESL events, show pictures on League of Legends events, and, you know, education part before they actually understand that this was a real thing and doing that. So the first couple of years was really about educating partners about that, especially the non-endemic. The endemic partners, they got it. They know what to do. They know exactly what they wanted to do and how to activate and all that. So that was more just finding extra things, what are the tournaments we do, how do we set that up, what are the new things we're talking about doing that. But so that's how we, as I said, that was the whole thing there. And then that turned into a little bit more on the North American focus for me when I went to be sales director for North American DreamHack. That's a little bit also when we talk about this. You've seen the merge today with ESL and DreamHack DAL. It has done. There's no DreamHack, it's part of ESL now. So that's where we started cooperating with ESL in 2018, actually. Started the first US sales, the US sales team, and me was starting working together to get kind of one sales group for the US. Instead of having several people running around trying to sell the same thing, let's work together. And I think that's where we are. A little bit of the embryo started today. I don't want to take everything for that. Other people have done more, but that's how that started a little bit. ESL and DreamHack working together.
Yeah, that's interesting. And so DreamHack is sort of like a gaming and lifestyle festival, and ESL was more the professional CSGO tournament side. And there was professional tournaments at the DreamHack event, but DreamHack offered a more robust convention festival experience. And so DreamHack, you mentioned kind of, it kind of falls under like tourism and hospitality in a way. And it brings sort of in a, an event to, local regions across the world. But what was the, so you talked about working with strategic partners and advertisers to go in and work, collaborate and integrate into DreamHack conventions. What would it be for, what was the process to get the venue to, for DNA stuff? Were you operate helping with operations in any way to kind of integrate those sales partnerships?
It was a whole team collaborating on that. It wasn't, I mean, as I said, getting the venues was one thing we needed to get, and then talk to us, the convention center, about explaining, you know, what is DreamHack? People seeing a lot of things. A lot of people see DreamHack as, you know, esports, and it's not the same as ESL because it's all about pro. But DreamHack is more than, that's a festival. That's more, it has more part of that. As I said, it's more robust programming. It's more a community events happening. It's a festival. Esports is a part of that. Then you have gaming, and then you have music, and then you have the lifestyle about gaming. That's a different thing. That's something we need to explain for the venue operators to do that. What is this coming there? I think one of the good things is that DreamHack has been around for 20 years, and they've done events. Hold on. Done a lot of events since 1994. People saw the events. They saw this big event in Sweden. You know, 10,000 people coming to compete. They have that vision. There's a lot of iconic pictures that we show the venues. This is what we bring it to you. That, and they all love that idea. They want to have that kind of tentpole event for the venue. So that's also, I mean, they need to fill their venues with activations programming. And if that's a sports arena, you know, sports season for the NFL is just a few weeks, or NHL is a little bit longer, or NBA, but in some parts, if it's music, convention center, you need to fill that in. So that's where we've actually had something coming that was new and fresh for the venue. So that's where I think DreamHack is a little bit different setup and a little better setup, if I can say that, compared to ESL that just looking for those kind of high-end arenas. DreamHack can actually come to anything there. And I would say the first event that DreamHack put on in Austin in 2016 was an amazing event they did there. And I was putting down the programming and partners coming into the event, and especially the fans and the community coming there. That was an amazing event there. I want to give props to the whole, as I said, the whole team that put that together with Marcus and Bass and, you know, Justin Barham and Justin Moskowitz. It's a lot of people that put a lot of heart and effort in making that first event that success. That made it also possible for DreamHack to do three events in the US in 2017. Maybe that was one too much because it went back to two events in 2018 instead, but that was people really seeing what DreamHack could do and be a part of that.
Absolutely. DreamHack has been a great contributor to where Esports Business Network is at today. I've gone through the process of doing a variety of different things with DreamHack, from Austin to Dallas to Anaheim, and looking forward to the event. The offline event in November with DreamHack Atlanta, but of course DreamHack Beyond is next week. So moving on into now you've career transitioned from DreamHack to now at Esports Entertainment Group. What changed? What's your role changed from DreamHack to Esports Entertainment Group?
At the Esports Entertainment Group, this is a completely another role. I'm actually now responsible for everything that's esports related, except for esports betting. That's not me. That's a person called Buxia who's running that. Excellent guy running. But everything else that esports related, what are we doing? We did four acquisitions during the end of last year. And this year, we bought Esports Gaming League, who's actually like an agency for esports. They work together with Konami, they work together with Microsoft, Red Bull, they work together with Arsenal FC to put up tournaments, esports activations there. The second acquisition we did was Helix, that's gaming centers, you know, LAN centers. It's a little bit, see them as people, but this community thing. People go there to meet other gamers, to hang around, participate in tournaments, or play games there. I think that's one of the key things that gaming is what's missing, that is that kind of where do you go and meet your fans, or meet your friends in there. And that's what Helix fills that. we see Helix as a part, you know, Top Golf. If you're American, you know what Top Golf is. This is Top Golf for gaming centers. They are high end, not that kind of dark, shabby things, you know, with lots of lighting and like that, bad food, even food at all. They actually have good offering of food. They have high end computers, the best internet, all that. So that's the thing there. The second one we did was third part of the company we bought was actually GD Surf. They create the best software for gaming centers. I think that's, you know, how do you manage your center? How do you actually make sure that the tournament is running? How do you make sure the computer is running? All the kind of thing. And also they got another product that I think tournament organizations should use called GD Rock. That's how they actually, when I was at DreamHack, we took computers in a room, it was 200. We started booting every one of them. With GD Rock, you can do that. It's 200 computers at the same time there. So I think they have the best software for both gaming sensor and for tournament ops. The fourth company bought was Kennedy Analytics. That's started by William Collins and Paul Gavin. William Collins also called the professor who wrote the book of esports, well knowledge, you know, he knows the space. He's been looking at AI and data. How can we use the data of people that are playing in the network, people playing at tournaments? They've been working with the NBA, they work with the FIFA to, you know, create scouting reports. How do people play, pass? You know, everything in gaming, even how they communicate, create a scout reports for the NBA 2 League so they can do that. But we also talk about the data, how we present the data we have from GD Circuit. We can look at what games are people playing, how long are they playing Fortnite, what games do they play after Fortnite, you know, well, how do they play with that hero, how do they play with that, all those kind of things, data that we are planning to use to make sure that, you know, that we can get back to the publishers and can create better games there. So all those things that we are creating an ecosystem, we also see that I don't know if you've been following what we're doing here, but we signed with a lot of sports teams there. We signed with the New York Rangers, we signed with Philadelphia Eagles, the Baltimore Ravens, Denver Broncos, a lot of those sports teams. So what we're doing there is we're actually making sure they can give an esports experience to their fans. Because a year ago, there were sports happening there, and they looked at esports, and they also see right now that how do we actually reach new fans? And esports is true that one that's interesting us. With esports, with EGL, we host tournaments for the fans. And we're not looking to say, hey, here's a tournament, you can win $50 or $100. That's not engaging enough. But if you can actually play with your star pro athlete favorite and maybe meet him on the field, you know, playing Call of Duty Warzone and whatever, or you can actually meet him in real and play Madden with him. Those are the things we think are more engaging in that. So we're building that ecosystem. And that's also with the sports teams, they're looking for how, I mean, they have big, as I talk about venues, they have big venues, they have space open there. How do they actually fill non-game nights, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, there's no football game. That's happening on Saturday, that's Monday night football, Saturday night football, Sunday. We can fill that for them. They can also bring new friends, new fans into the thing. So with Helix expertise about building centers and driving centers, with GD Circuit, with the knowledge they have about both building centers, but also how they actually can, you know, build it out, tournament platform for EGL, we are full service for that. There's nobody else that can give that to the teams to build that. So I think that's where we are unique in having offering that nobody else has on the market right now.
Absolutely. And so what are some of the benefits of being a publicly traded company and being able to basically get, number one, it's like a validation factor, a social proofing factor for some of those. We talked about advertisers before and sponsors, endemic and non-endemic. And for those non-endemic ones, advertisers and strategic partnerships, what has that done being a publicly traded company versus your previous experience with, I guess it was the Modern Times Group, right? With DreamHack.
I mean, as a public traded company, I think there's a validation that we are a legit company. We can't do any crazy stuff there. There's also the SEC overwatching what you're doing here. But also since we're also a betting company, we have all the licensee, like if that's New Jersey, if that's the UK, DC, or if that's Malta, they always have the access to our books. So we can't do any crazy shit there. So that makes us legit in that case. We have all the tier one licenses. We have the Malta license. We have the UK license. We have a Swedish license. We have an Irish license, Spanish license, and all those things. So that makes sure that we are legit. And I think that's when we come to publishers. We are a US company. We are listed on the NASDAQ. That gives a validation that these guys are good to work with. That's thing. We have arm's length. There's silos between the betting and the esport. It has to be that way. They can't be combing in any way. That's important to know. So that's why we have SEC or what we're doing here also. But also, as I said, one of the key things being a listed company is access to capital. So when we can raise money, we can get people to invest in us building up the company there. That's a huge thing compared to if you're not a listed company or you're just a private company. Capital is a big thing there for us to do that, to be able to actually accelerate the growth and start continue building what we're doing here. And I've already started here.
And so being responsible for so much and kind of in general, being responsible for the whole of esports at the Esports Entertainment Group, what has been, so you mentioned acquisitions. What has been sort of the process since you got there to so sort of branding in an aspect of moving forward and doing something innovative in the space versus like copying, what other companies are currently doing in the industry? What is the innovation factor?
I mean, the innovation factor firstly, I'm not doing this alone. I have a great team there, as I said. Yeah. From my side, working in esports with me is Ken Silva's joined us, has an extensive background, even bigger than I have. He's an amazing guy, has developed the knowledge, having a head of legal that's been in this space for a long time, Lydia Roy, knows the way around. Having Pierre Cotin as operations, that's also a team that helps me run day-to-day business. And also, but don't forget people that are actually doing that. I mean, Jack and Murphy Vanderwell, who runs Helix, they started that. You have Zach Johnson and Chris McGee, who started DD Circuit. William Collis and Paul Gavin starting Genie. It's a teamwork to doing that. And that all people are driven by the passion for esports, but also in the innovative things there. That's how they develop and how we move things forward here. Once again, it all started also, as I said, going back, now I'm praising people here, as I said, but also going back to Grant Johnson, the CEO of the company. He had a vision. He saw what he wanted to build. So he's been bolting on people in to do that. And I was had the lucky chance to know them. I've also been an advisor for Esport Entertainment Group since before even the stock there. So, advising that. So he's been the driving force, of course, of why we buy this company. We're looking at this part also. So that's been an interesting factor of how we want to set that up. Then, of course, it's been a lot of people having ideas and thinking about how we want to build a company in there. What are things we want to add? I think we started building something that, as I said, that's unique. We are still maybe missing a couple of things here that we want to add that's coming later on. So that's something we're looking at. It might come more acquisitions or we have to build it ourselves. So we'll see. I think we have an exciting future coming up for us in the next couple of years there.
Yeah. So what has been some of the challenges now acquiring a retail land center into your company portfolio versus not having to deal with brick and mortar?
Yeah. I mean, when I started June last year of June, I think number 14, number 15 in the company. Today, a little more than a year later, we are almost 200 people there. That's kind of scalability, that's growth pain is that thing. I mean, we don't have everything put in there. So we're working on day to day and make sure that, driving the business forward, but also setting up structure, setting up things that's been the hard part. How are they actually doing that? And having an HR department that take care of all the contracts, make sure people get paid, see that people don't overwork, or having a finance department in place, all those kind of things has been, I think we'll, Somebody said, you're building a plane while you fly it. And that's what we're doing there. Mm-hmm. We're really building something when we're flying it right now. We're doing that in a high speed right now. So that's one of the challenges. How do you make sure that we are doing the right thing, we're moving forward, but we still have a structure on what we're doing there. And that's what I think with adding people in right now, as we're doing right now, that's what we needed. That. And that's why we need to have the legal to make sure we do the things. Coming Kenny in to take care of revenue, prepare for the operations, you know, and having all the other people can focus and concentrate on what they actually build there. So they don't have to go find ways to find revenues in there. That's actually the PubCo can make sure that they can focus on the stuff they've done that. So if you look at the circuit, building the best software, that's what they can focus on. They don't have to do other things there. They can do that. Same for Genio. As I said, for Helix brick and mortar, how can we actually build that out to be the best gaming center in there? How can we make sure that the food and beverage is good? The computers are the best one. How do we actually do the programming? How we set it up? Why should I go there? Because you have the same experience home. You have a better computer, maybe have a high-end computer home. You have better internet. There's nobody that sits beside you. But how do we make that experience so much better than actually sitting at home so you actually go down to the center? Is that a Call of Duty tournament, or is that a watch party, or is that anything else? What is that driving? So that's where we want to have those guys focus on, and because that's why we want it, to focus on the things that they've done really, really well.
That's interesting. And I guess I got another couple of questions. Not necessarily about the Lancer, but about the acquisition with the Genji and Linux. What's been different about the application process of the Genji Analytics? Have you been able to expand the clientele that have been utilizing the services compared to because now Genji Analytics has a wider array of access with Esports Entertainment Group?
That's what we're working on. How can we expand that? But also how can we build up new products for them? Because with the acquisition, we gave them also access to more data than they ever had, because now they can actually get data from GD Circuit, but they were not the same company, couldn't share data. Now they're owned by the same company, we can share the data internally in there. So that we give them access to get more data, to also build better products, build new products in there. And that's the interesting thing. How can we, use William's expertise, knowledge, Paul's smartness, how to build everything up. That's what we want to accelerate that. So taking away the things, how do we actually make sure there's money, if revenue coming in, we can make sure that they have revenue and funding to make and build the best products out there. How can you give them the best, as an input of things to take that out? That's what we're doing there. That's what we're trying to do every day for these companies. Make sure they have revenue so they can build out the best products.
That's actually really interesting. You mentioned there with the ability to now access the information from the LAN Center software on the GG Circuit side. Has that impacted at all the recruiting process for collegiate teams or professional teams being able to see sort of the player base that's in LAN Centers, where previously they didn't have any access to that sort of data?
That's what we're building up tools for, that as I said, for these teams to find that, because there's scouting tools today. There's no good, at least no good scouting tools. I mean, you get the tip about look at that player, you need to find his Twitch stream, and then you need to look at that and see, but there's no real data about actually how's he been playing there. Is he playing X, Y? And also, there's a big difference here, sitting at home playing video games, or actually sitting at Atlanta playing video games. We can track that. So we are building out. We don't have those products yet, but we're building out those products. It's some part of that what we're looking to do there. So we're finding new products in there.
Yeah, absolutely. And if there was a company with the resources and the access to doing that, it's definitely Esports Entertainment Group. And what's interesting about that is, what does that mean? What's the application when it comes to the education side of esports, with more and more high schools and colleges adopting esports programs. And what does that mean for admissions whenever esports teams of the collegiate side are looking for, how do they recruit and how do they scout for players to come play for them? Because you mentioned, professional teams even at this time are looking for viral clips. They're looking for social media, and they're looking for content to validate and legitimize the player's competitive advantage over other players, and making a decision whether they should come and be a part of their organization or play for them. And so, yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing more about that and the innovations that happen with the connection between really sophisticated data with Gen.G analytics to the brick and mortar retail of a Helix and an addition of the software GG Circuit. And so what are some of the things that you look for out in the esports industry when it comes to innovation, and what are some of the things you guys are looking for? You mentioned you're looking to possibly acquire more companies. What does that process look like, and how are you thinking about that?
I mean, when it comes to, as I said, for us, I think what we're looking for is I think the esport is missing a little bit of how do we monetize the players, the users, the gamers, I would say. I think that's one of the key things. That's how do we do that today? And I think there's a lot of companies that are trying to do that, but hasn't found the formula. I think we're trying to find the formula in our way, how we do that. And it's different from company to company, how you do that. So that's what we think about. How can we do that with different products, new products, or develop the products that we have? So that's an ongoing thinking all the time there. When it comes to mergers and acquisitions, we have a whole team that looks at that also for the company. Of course, we have a roadmap or where we see that we have gaps, what we're missing there, or how we can add on things there. So that's an internal process. That's led by Jeff Cohen, who's our investor relations. He's a former analyst for Stevens Bank, so he's been actually one of the few that knows esports and has been looking at that from an analyst side. So of course, he's an instrumental part in actually how we build that out there. And then we have, of course, our CFO Dan Marks and our chief legal officer Stuart Tilley in the part of that group, and we look at acquisitions and make sure that everything's running there. So it's a whole team looking at that part. And for example, I want to put out John Bracken's also our CTO, former Activision Blizzard there, who has that. So that's a team. And of course, we got a lot of opportunities, people coming to us that want to be acquired. Some people want to look for investments. We're still a small companies. We don't do investments. We buy companies to make sure that we have that. And that's what we're doing and plan to do that. So we're not looking to invest in companies. But as I said, we have some gaps that we want to fill what I think we're going to do. And we'll see what's coming there. You know, it's always hard to speak about those things when you're a listed company, because you can't say too much things that might, you know, need to be within the certain boundaries when stock price and all those kind of things there. So I gotta leave it there. I think we have things there happening. Might even say too much or not, but I pause for that, saying not too much there.
Yeah, I completely understand. And so as we move into the third segment of this podcast, it's going to get a little bit more generalized. You know, we got to kind of introduce people to the esports entertainment group and what they're trying to accomplish as a company. I feel like the we didn't really mention it, but you did mention that you acquired a tournament operator, EGL. What's interesting about this time right now is we just went through a pandemic. All the basically tournaments went to an online environment. And we're starting to see trickle back offline event tournaments with some of the developers and whatnot. What have been some of the challenges that Esports Entertainment Group has faced when it comes to licensing with developers? And in the case of a good example of that was back in during the pandemic, Nintendo decided to cease and desist on Evo for choosing to use a emulator for the virtual environments. What are some of the challenges you've seen?
I think the challenge is there's no rule set. The publisher owns the game. The publisher owns the rule set, and that's the challenging thing. There's no governing body for that one, as you have with gaming or football or whatever. That in good and bad, that's what it is. I mean, if you look at Epic, they closed down all offline events. So there were it's all the online tournaments doing that. They changed that. I don't think they open up for online tournaments yet. You have Activision Blizzard who has another rule set and understand how you can do that. So I think that how do you operate with the different publishers there? If you work with, I mean, we started work with Riot. We are running a Summer Proving Grounds tournament right now for the North American. We just did an event together with Activision Blizzard on Call of Duty. It's different. It's different sets, different rule sets, community rules and all that. That's what you need to navigate around. And I think that's the challenging thing there. How do that, because it's different one for different game, different types of different games and different publishers in there. And they allow certain things and everything like that. So that's how you actually keep that within the rules. If that's a community license, if that's a professional license, it all depends on the tournament, the price pool, and all those kind of things. And so that I think that's what we're trying to navigate those waters with that. The team over at EGL has been amazing doing that. They've done that for a long time, so they know what to do there and find the right ways to how to work with publishers and building that out. And as I said, we're also building out the team to run talk with publishers because it's going to be an important part moving forward also.
What about the process of acquiring broadcasting rights? Is that separate, or can you package the game license with the licensing of the broadcasting?
I mean, we can do broadcast on that one. It's more if we want to sell the broadcast rights to anything, that's where we need to separate different licenses there. I mean, we want to just do our own community stream broadcast on Twitch, we can do that. There's no special license in that. But if we want to start selling that to ESPN, or we want to sell that to, you know, Swedish television, or, you know, whatever that can be, that's another way you monetize that. And also, but then usually it's a step up on tournament side, price money, all that. So then you actually would need that kind of thing there. But also it's a different setup how you do those roles. I know you said Rima has people just selling media rights for them and doing that, and it's a hard work over there. So right now we are running community tournaments. We focus on that one. So it's not, we don't have media rights for that. We're not looking to sell them. We're looking to monetize them instead. Doing that, so we don't need to sell them to ESPN or, you know, whatever that can be. There's other ways we can put that content out, as I said.
You would know better than me because I'm actually kind of blanking on this. You brought up DreamHack. DreamHack acquired a media company right before DreamHack Anaheim, and I can't remember exactly what company it was. In order to accomplish those traditional terrestrial television broadcasting systems. I can't remember what the company was, or maybe it was not an acquisition. It was a partnership, and now I can't remember what company it was. Is that the route for traditional terrestrial broadcasting?
I mean, I think that might be the way, but I think for easy, if you look at an esport tournament and look compare that to, if you look at take ESL Cologne that was just running, and then look at the sports game, then Bay Finals, for example. The programming for esport tournaments, 10 hours straight, match, you don't know how long it's going to be. That's not for traditional TV, terrestrial TV. You know, that's a 3 hour, the NFL, NBA, NHL, all 3 hour segments. You know, it started with the pre-game, there's a break, there's commercials, all that. Right. And then it's 3 hours, the post game, then 3 hour, boom, package, go away, done. Mm-hmm. Esport Cologne, that was running for 10, 12 hours. Sometimes, I mean, I've been at DreamHack when events, when, you know, the matches end at 3 a.m. I think esport, if that's right, going to go into that traditional TV, if you call that, I think the packaging needs to be different there. That's, you need to make sure that it's more bite sizes for the audience, for the traditional TV to do that, because they need to work and program around that. They can't just run 12 hours of Counter-Strike. Then they're missing and losing out a lot of people. They need more bid up there. So I think that up a little bit. So that's why I think, I'm not sure what it is for traditional TV, how that's going to be looking. I think they need another format, another thing there. But I know there's a lot of smart people working on that, how to actually make content for TV happening there. Once again, at the same time, if you're 18 to 35, I don't know, Trent, when did you watch linear TV? When did they actually do that? I mean, usually that's, I'm not a linear TV guy and I'm old. I don't watch linear TV. That's usually streams. So you go to Netflix, you HBO, Disney, right, whatever. That's where you go. You don't go on, you know, channel 1 or channel 27 or whatever, because you want to watch it when you want to watch it. The only thing where it's like, it's when it's live, that's when you might go in there. Otherwise, you find, if you want to watch Friends, you can see the rerun, but it's have commercial. Okay, let's go to Netflix or HBO, whatever has that instead. So I think that's what linear TV has a challenge. How to actually access that young audience there.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting conversation. It's one that's often had, because media broadcasting, that's the ticket sale for most companies that want to make money in the esports industry. The tournament side, it's got a lot of development that needs to be done in order for it to be sustainable online and offline in some cases, because the players friction between payments and player friction between the business side of their contracts, that is sort of preventing it to be in that linear TV model. You have TBS getting involved and then broadcasting on a YouTube TV or on a Hulu or whatnot, but that's sort of like circumventing that broadcasting issue to a degree, or the Overwatch League, for instance, and stuff like that. But so aside from that, I kind of want to, before we wrap it up here, the last thing that I think is interesting was, how are you guys, you mentioned EGL, but with tournaments specifically and in the online environment, what is it that you guys are working on to kind of connect to more gamers, to get to access to more gamers on a community level? How is it? Is it content focused? Is it platform focused? Or are you kind of approaching it from all the angles? Or how is the process? What is the mindset behind trying to make online tournaments more compelling or a better offering?
I mean, one other thing, that's why we team up, as I said, going back to what I told earlier, the sports team, we sign with these big sports teams. How do we get them? I mean, they have 20 million fans, 50 million fans. If you can get just a few percentage of those people competing in a tournament for their favorite team, we're onto something there. And we think we do that. Instead of playing for $50 or $100, I'd actually play for an experience. So getting something, prices that money can't buy. That's what we're looking for. That's how we can get more into that one. But that's, as I said, that once again, that's esports, or that's competitive gaming, so to say. I think we also need to talk about how do we actually access the big chunk that people don't want to compete in, but they still want to game. How do we get those people in there? And I know that's one of the things that TD Circuit and SAC is working on. How can we get people more engaged, more people playing video games that doesn't necessarily want to competitive gaming, but they still want to have an experience? That's something that we're trying to figure out. And if there are some ideas, there's some initiatives that are going to be launched during the autumn around that one. So we are attacking from several angles, but with the sports scene, we think we're onto something there, because there's a marriage between gamers and sports fans. That's something we think it's an interesting focus that nobody has been actually looking at. How can we get that?
So absolutely.
That's why we signed with all these, as I said, with all these big sports teams there. If we think that's an access to more players coming in, competing on our platforms.
Very interesting. Well, again, I want to say thank you for coming on the show. Magnus Lepiame, thank you for coming on, speaking about eSports business, eSports Entertainment Group. I want to give you the opportunity to let the audience know how to get connected with the eSports Entertainment Group and what is the best way to get in contact with you if they have an opportunity or they want to be able to see if there's any synchronicity between their company and eSports Entertainment Group.
I mean, you can always find me on LinkedIn, Magnus Lepiniemi, there on LinkedIn. You can shoot me a message. I think that's the easiest one. Or send me an email, magnus@eeg.games. I mean, give me my email address there. I always try to respond as many people as I can. If I can give advice or I can give help, that's definitely, let me know. I can do that. And as I said, that's the two easiest way to get in contact with me. And if any questions, shoot them over. And if you need any advice, I'm happy to help. Maybe not has as much time as I used to have before. You know, we're running four companies here and part of the larger group here. So that takes a lot of time. But I try to help as many people as I can, or give them guidance or show them direction there. So I love to do that and see that people help people growing here in the space, because it is a great space to be in, and esports and gaming has a great future also.
Thank you. And again, this has been Magnus Lepiniemi of the Esports Entertainment Group. It's a lot to say. And it's also a lot to say. This has been the Esports Business Network podcast. Thank you for listening.
Thanks, Trent. Nice to...
Hey, y'all, it's Trent Knox, founder and CEO of Esports Business Network. I want to say thank you for listening to this podcast. If you're finding value in the podcast, I would greatly appreciate it if you share the podcast to your network and write a positive review on your preferred podcast platform. If you're feeling extra generous, feel free to make a contribution to our working capital accounts on Cash App or PayPal. Our username is ESPORTSBIZNET. That's Esports BizNet on both platforms. As always, we'd love for you to join our community and platform at https://www.ebn.gg. You can take advantage of a free subscription to our bronze membership by following the directions on the homepage. Part of the bronze membership is access to our Discord server and private membership channels. The conversation only evolves with participation from esports entrepreneurs like yourself. We need to hear about your esports business to understand how we can move the industry forward as a community. You can also join the community by joining the Facebook and LinkedIn groups. An additional goal of EBN is to move the conversation forward on your preferred social media platform. So as a last note, don't forget to follow us on social media for current events, news, and other esports related topics. Follow and subscribe to Esports Business Network on social media. Looking forward to networking with you very soon.